My name is Bob Whitaker, and I can't help it. A forensic pathologist is the guy that the coroner and sometimes the defense brings up. He's a medical specialist who deals in corpses, often shows up in murder cases. And there are two things that a person has to be able to do in order to be a forensic pathologist. First, he has to be able to take a desiccated body or a few bones and tell you the characteristics of the dead person. One of those characteristics is his race. A forensic pathologist will have to be able to take very little left of a human body, skin, or bone, or whatever he's got, and tell you what race the person is. In order to be a forensic pathologist, he also has to swear that race does not exist, because that is, of course, the required line today, that race does not exist. So to be a forensic pathologist, you have to be able to tell someone's race from very as few remains as possible, and you have to testify that race doesn't exist. This is what George Orwell called doublethink and what we call today professionalism. There are usually people say that if you've lost an argument, you can do one of two things. You can either admit you were wrong or change the subject. But if you have enough power, what you can do is neither change the subject nor admit you were wrong. You just say, "What subject?" Again, we're back to Orwell again. If you lose an argument and you have the power, you can just say, "Well, there wasn't any question of this. Well, I didn't say anything about this." I think George Orwell actually got his example from the practice of Joseph Stalin. When Stalin would declare someone a non-person and have them executed, one of his party leaders, then they would actually go back over the photographs and carefully take that person out of photographs, which included Stalin. They would excise the people. Sometimes it kind of looked funny because Stalin would have his arm around somebody and they'd have to sort of remake it so the arm sort of disappeared. Most of them are pretty amateurish jobs. But that was something Stalin did. And of course, for decades, liberals, and of course, respectable conservatives, I always have to add that because that's the kept opposition, that's part of the liberal establishment, they would agree that all the races were exactly equal. I remember seeing a comic book when I was about, or when I was a kid, when I was still reading comic books, and it had a picture on there of an Oriental and a black and a white going across the finish line together in a foot race, and it said all races are proven equal. And the standard line was, "Modern anthropologists have proven that all races are equal, all innate abilities." This was one of those regular statements that you heard all the time. Well, then you had Arthur Jensen, and you had all of these, for that matter, Francis Crick, who was one of the found two people who got a Nobel Prize for finding DNA. You had all of these people, Jensen, and now the Bell Curve, which they just kept pointing out that the fact is the IQ, there is an IQ difference between whites and blacks. And the liberals finally just gave up on the thing. There have been some things out talking about that lately, and for once there wasn't any scream of thundering of objection. They just sort of acted like it wasn't there. Now, so the third way of dealing with a time when you are just plain dead wrong is to say the question never came up. So today the line is, as with a forensic pathologist, race is not there. You know, that comic book I was talking about is kind of funny with a foot race, because now the winners of the Olympics are invariably from one side of Africa, black people, and the winners on the sprints are from the other side of Africa. Now that we're dealing with DNA, absolutely nothing that liberalism and respectable conservatism are based on, that I used to hear in the 1950s, that's complete nonsense. I mean, they have to act like they never said it. For example, as I pointed out before, the schizophrenia was called the schizophrenic response, because only Hitler in the 1950s, only Hitler believed that there was even such a thing as genetic propensity. Now they not only know that schizophrenia is genetic, it's not a response. It's they can point to the gene that causes it. So that kind of thing. The only way to deal with just how ridiculous what all of our present theories are based on, the only way you can deal with that is to say it never came up. Another thing that was debated over the years between the liberals and the respectable conservatives who say that, like Hannity, who says there's no difference in the innate intelligence of any two children, it's just family upbringing and so forth. The difference between liberals and conservatives isn't that great on issues like that. You can't be a respectable conservative if you don't agree with the liberal line on these things. But on heredity versus environment, the whole history of the thing becomes hideously embarrassing if you're a professor and you go back to the 50s and you start quoting some of that unmitigated crap that they were talking about with environment, with everything, and all mental aberrations, all mental problems were the result of childhood traumas and all that stuff. I mean, it's beyond childish. So what happened? Well, the same thing happened. What happened on the question of heredity and environment? Did the liberals and their pet conservatives agree that they were just plain wrong? Well, no. What happened on race was, once they lost the argument, they said, well, there isn't any such thing as race. Well, exactly the same thing happened on heredity and environment. You listen to them now, everybody agrees that there's no such thing as heredity, and there's no such thing as environment. They say, well, it's awfully complicated. People who get beaten in arguments are always saying how complicated the whole question is. You're being simplistic. So it's just very complicated, and there's no such thing as heredity or environment. So that's about the only way you can know that the establishment has been beaten to death. Even though they suppressed all other points of view, they still couldn't keep a lid on. And when they're beaten to a pulp, no liberal will ever say that he was wrong. He will say, well, that question never existed. Which, of course, is right straight out of George Orwell. You just burn the photographs, you burn the memories, and that is what respectable conservatives are very good at doing. That's why they are more valuable. They are so valuable to liberals. They're wonderful because they give this ridiculous impression of an opposition. But let me give you an idea of what respectable conservatives are like. Now, let's say that old Bob is an architect. And I'm sitting there with a liberal architect and a respectable conservative architect. Now, the liberal architect is famous in Hollywood. He's in the magazines. He's, for 30 years, he's been the authority in the field. And me and him and this respectable conservative are sitting there. All right. I say, look, Mr. Liberal Architect, the last 11 buildings you built all fell down. As I remember, the first one, there were 5,000 people killed. The second one fell down during construction. Just 5 or 6 construction workers were killed. But your buildings have all fallen down. The respectable conservative resentfully says, you're not showing the proper respect here. You're getting obsessed with this building falling down business. And I think, since Mr. Liberal Architect is a good man, I disagree with him on many, many things, but in general, he's a fine man, professional architect, and I think we should keep this debate on a decent level. And I get back to my thing. Well, you know, all that stuff aside, the buildings fell down. And the conservative sort of sighs, looks over at the liberal, and the liberal kind of laughs. So they managed to get through the program, and I'll guarantee you on the next architecture this week, old Bob won't be on the program, because he just can't get off the idea that every building this architect built fell down. Now, the conservative will say, that's simplistic. We have certain design differences. I'm very worried about the fact that buildings fall down. So, like, everything we predicted that would happen with integration happened. Everything that we predicted with the crime policy. And I remember very well, although everybody else has forgotten it, in the 60s, every campus, society, I mean, all this thing we make a joke about now was the absolute rule. That is to say, society was guilty. You had to get to the root causes of crime. Punishment was just society having revenge. It's like the official Catholic Church line about capital punishment is just revenge. Well, the Catholic Church back in the 70s went to these same experts. Today, the Catholic Church, the bishops are saying, well, yes, we did get a few 100,000 kids molested, and that was bad, but what we did was, and they say this out loud, they said, we went to the psychologists all of the 1970s, and they said that these child molesters could be cured. You had to deal with them, not vengefully, but forgivingly, give them another chance, and another chance, and another chance. And I remember that's exactly what they used to say. Nowadays, I don't think there's any sane person who believes that, even who would say out loud that a child molester can be just shuttled from child counseling job to child counseling job, or if he's a priest, from parish to parish. But the thing about the church, people, I don't know, as I say, I do tend to get obsessed with things like buildings falling down and programs collapsing. But the church is supposed to teach. It is not supposed to go to social experts to get its teaching. The church is supposed to do the teaching. And if it does it wrong, it's not the 1970s psychologists. I mean, they took their degrees and they had their warped point of view. It's not their fault. A priest is supposed to judge. But here's the Catholic Church hiding behind the fact that in the 70s, they respected the liberals, and the liberals were just plain wrong. That's not an excuse, gang. If that's an excuse, the church should really go out of business fast, at least. Maybe it should go back to worrying about the salvation of souls instead of moral teaching on capital punishment. Now, let's get down to the simple truth about capital punishment. Punishment works. The crime rate has been going down since we threw away all this rehabilitation crap and started talking about and started locking them up. The liberals have started saying, well, yes, the conservatives say that the crime rate has gone down, but the prison population has gone up. And the New York Times keeps saying that. That sort of proves the whole thing didn't work, because the crime rate has gone down, but the prison population has gone up. And therefore, this is supposed to be a contradiction. They keep saying that. They keep posing this as a serious question. And, of course, the respectable conservative says, my God, you're just so brilliant. I disagree with you on certain points, but you really are smart. Now, if they let me on the program, I would get a little obsessed with the fact that punishment works. I worked in prisons for a little while, and frankly, I'm glad most of the people who are there are there. I wish they wouldn't put David Duke or Don Black in there. But most of the people who actually end up in prison are much better behind those bars. I remember my brother, his military service was 2 years of the public health service. He worked in the prisons, which is how I ended up working around there. At least I think I was working around there. They paid me in, and they let me out in the evening. But he had spent 2 years working in Alderson Prison, the women's prison up in West Virginia back in the 50s, and the Atlanta Federal Pen. And he knew that people end up in prison. It's very hard to get into prison these days. You can get into prison automatically if you carry a gun for your own defense in New York City. That's a 1 year required sentence. Liberals say they're against minimum sentencing, but when it comes to having a gun, they have a minimum sentence, and every liberal supports it. Or hate speech, of course, in Europe, you have minimum sentencing. But my brother had spent his time working in the federal pen for a couple of years. He was pretty hardened to it. He was given an honorary ex-con certificate by his former patients in the federal pen. I always said that any Whitaker, when he goes into a prison, the people say, now there's a guy who fits in with the population here. Anyway, they seemed to like him. They gave him his honorary ex-convict certificate. So he was pretty well used to the whole thing, and he and I were doing some research in the CCI, the South Carolina State Pen here. And in every prison, when I was around them, the standing joke was the prison psychologist. Well, you know, you don't have a hell of a lot to do in prison, so they were kind of fun, because this guy, the prison psychologist, in pretty well every prison, I think they only lasted a short time, a few years. They never really got used to the prison mentality. And, of course, they had taken a master's degree that told them that, and still does tell them, that all these prisoners are innocent victims of society. And if psychologists were just given more money and more programs, they would end crime. And, of course, psychologists are very interested in rehabilitation because it's their major industry. Anyway, so here's a guy who took 4 years of psychology in school. He You took a master's. In order to take a master's, you have to satisfy your faculty, and very few politically incorrect people, less every year, can actually get a master's degree. Then I think they spend a year in some sort of psychological practice, and then they get their job at the prison. Well, by this time, they are reduced to cucumbers, mental cucumbers. I mean, they just repeat. These poor people are victims of society. They need rehabilitation, not punishment, and so forth. So the prison psychologist was always kind of fun. The prisoners would come out, and they just couldn't believe it. See, one rule is that prisoners tend to lie. If they committed bank robbery, they will probably also tell an untruth from time to time. And the natural response of most prisoners is to lie. Just as your natural response is to tell the truth, their natural response is to lie. And the prison psychologists were wonderful. They would go in and they would tell him anything they made up about how they were victimized or anything they felt like. And then they would come. I remember one guy was actually staggering. He was laughing so hard that the psychologist swallowed every single word he said. And they did it for years. These psychologists would be around, the prison psychologist. He was all the standing joke. He believed every single word the prisoner told him, and nobody could quite believe it. Well, the prison psychologist, my brother and I were doing this research. My brother, as I said, had 2 years working in the federal pen. And we were sitting there going through the files, doing this research, and the prison psychologist walked up to us with that martyred expression on his face. And my brother didn't pay much attention to him. He was just going through the files. He didn't even look up. And this psychologist walked up and he said, because he thought my brother, being a doctor, a neurologist from outside, hell, he had been a Harvard faculty member, so he thought he had a friend and buddy there. So he walked up, he said to my brother, he said, "Dr. Whitaker, what do you tell a 19-year-old boy who's been sentenced to 37 years in this place?" Well, now you can imagine what kind of crime that kid, repeated crime that kid had to commit to get a 37-year sentence. I was watching Cops one time, and it was actually right here in Columbia, South Carolina, and this kid was running away from police. Car flipped over, he killed two other kids. Turned out, 19-year-old kid, we get our driver's licenses at 15. I got mine when I was 14, legal back then. But in like 4 years of driving, this kid had been arrested 18 times. That meant he had 18 defense lawyers, 18 judges, all of whom had let him go until he actually killed himself and these other kids. So if you can't get your driver's license taken away with all the appeals we have these days, you can imagine just what kind of kid this guy was talking about. But the prison psychologist, the kid had told him that he had a bad upbringing and so forth and so on, and how he was railroaded into the penitentiary and all that bit, and I'm sure he believed every word of it. And the psychologist just staggered up and said, "Dr. Whitaker, what do you tell an 18-year-old boy who's been sentenced to 37 years here?" My brother didn't look up. He was shuffling through the pages of those files and writing stuff down, and he said, "Tell him, let that be a lesson to him." Well, I don't think the psychologist came to my brother anymore for as an allied humanitarian. But the point is that those teenagers would still be alive if they had used punishment on that teenager flying away. And the kid who got thrown into prison for 37 years and will get out after 13 years, probably on parole, so he can commit some more crimes. We have found that that doesn't work. Now, granted, the Catholic Church didn't figure that out. Bishops didn't figure that out. But the rest of us pretty well know that punishment works. Now, what is punishment? Punishment is doing something to somebody that they do not want done to them. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, boy, I think I'm going to get me some punishment today. Punishment is very simply what you don't want. Now, question. Does capital punishment prevent crime? And that boils down to, is capital punishment something people don't want? Well, I suggest you wander down to your local state penitentiary. Go to the ones who are in there for life without parole. Or ask Manson, you know, the killer from the 60s, ask him, would you like to be executed? And they will probably call the guard, because while they are dangerous felons, you are a dangerous lunatic, and lunatics are strong. So they would probably ask for the guard to come protect them from you. Of course, they don't want to be executed. Execution is something they don't want. Therefore, execution is a punishment. Therefore, it does prevent crime. For example, in a lot of states, life in prison without parole is the max, which means that you have handed the guy in there the license to kill. If he's in there for life without parole, it's very hard to increase his sentence. So, the only thing you got is manacles to keep him from killing somebody if he faces death. Even if he's in there for life without parole, he's going to act a little better if he has a serious threat of death. In fact, that's what prisoners do, in fact, use on each other. If you don't think capital punishment works, ask some guy in prison for life without parole whether he listens if there's somebody there who might kill him. You bet your sweet life. In fact, you do bet your sweet life that he is very much concerned about that. So the whole question is silly. Of course capital punishment prevents crime. It's a punishment. Even for someone who is in prison for life at hard labor, it's a punishment. It's not really a question, you see. So the Catholic Church today is doing exactly what it did when it got those tens and hundreds of thousands of little boys. And they were little boys. It wasn't sexual molestation. It was homosexual molestation. But the Catholic Church is right back where it was then. The big kick is being against capital punishment. So the Catholic Church, that is to say the bureaucracy in the Vatican, follows the party line, so they're big on being against capital punishment. And of course they just made that mistake. They just got through having hundreds of thousands of little boys raped. But anyway, the point is, there's no question about these things. The only person who could actually sit there and take some liberal seriously, or some O'Reilly seriously, who's saying that capital punishment doesn't work, or capital punishment isn't really a punishment, would be a respectable conservative. You have to have the right kind of mentality to be a respectable conservative. You can't worry about whether the building falls down. You got to worry about how the liberals make sense. You got to be able to sit there and quote debate unquote quote both sides unquote with a liberal. Yeah, respectable conservatives are about the foulest kind of animal there is. I think liberals are just so far over that I'm talking about the total liberals are just so far over they genuinely believe that stuff. Moderates and conservatives are dishonest people. I could say, when I actually think, that a respectable conservative makes whale do look like it's sitting on the top of Mount Everest, but that would sound a little rednecky, I suppose. But the Orwellian state of mind that was back in 1948, a lot of people thought that sounded really wild when Orwell was talking about doublethink. But I don't think anybody listening to me right now has the slightest difficulty, at what side is on politically, understanding when I say that a forensic pathologist has to be able to tell a person's race from a minimum of physical evidence, and he has to say that race doesn't exist. This is just the way things are. A Catholic priest has to say, well, we made this terrible mistake listening to the experts and listening to all these, quote, humanitarians, unquote, when it came to child molestation, and now all the authorities say that, meaning the same authorities, say that capital punishment is not a preventative. Now, if you were a guard in a prison in a state which has a maximum punishment of life in prison without parole, and you had to guard people who have life in prison without parole, I think you would feel a good deal safer if they had the death penalty. You wouldn't be able to say so, because you might lose your job if you said it, or at least you don't necessarily lose your job. What happens is they sort of overlook you for promotion. It's sort of like getting a PhD or a master's degree. My entire graduate faculty, including two future Nobel Prize winners, was booted out of the University of Virginia for being conservative politically. So I'm not talking theory here. And anytime you get a bunch of bureaucrat policemen with the scrambled eggs on their hats, they always say they're in favor of gun control, and there's never been. I've never heard a rational argument in favor of gun control. I will say that as a flat statement. One of the most fascinating things I saw was when Professor Lott, University of Chicago, one of the heroes of our day, really, wrote his book about more guns, less crime, and talked about what a preventative it was for citizens to have guns. And the experience with concealed weapons permits is that there's just nobody. We're talking about millions. If you take the individuals times the year, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of years, hundreds of thousands of people for over 10 years who had these gun permits, and the violations are just minuscule. So I remember when the idea of a concealed weapons permit came up, the New York Times was screaming, there will be a bloodbath. Our local state paper here, sort of a rather pitiful, sort of a retarded New York Times clone, it said that it'd just be the old West again. All these people would be running around with guns and shooting each other. They were actually saying that. You will note that everybody has totally, absolutely, right down the memory hole, forgotten all that talk about the bloodbath, but that was the standard line. I remember after the gun permits came out, for about a year, I reminded some liberals about it, and they said, well, there aren't enough permits out yet. The bloodbath will start. But it's been quite a while, and the bloodbath hasn't started. Honest people who are allowed to carry guns are a preventative. There was a PBS program with Professor Lott was there, and he was quoting his statistics. All of the gun study statistics always show that, exactly like heredity and environment, all the identical twin tests always come out proving that heredity is terribly important. The facts are what they are. And on this PBS program, the anti-gun people were claiming Now, we're talking about people who want to ban guns, and they were saying that, well, it wouldn't hurt to ban guns. None of them were arguing that banning guns would reduce crime. They had already given up the argument. They didn't make it quite clear as to why they wanted the guns taken away. They just wanted the guns taken away. I guess they had spent years in these organizations as activists. They've gotten their reputations and stuff. Of course, you get the same thing with the police. If the police want, if somebody wants to get those scrambled eggs, if he wants to stop being a desk sergeant and he wants to get promoted and maybe end up with those stars and those scrambled eggs on his hat as a policeman, he's going to have to toe the line. And one thing they all have to swear to is the gloriousness of gun control. You just can't get scrambled eggs on your policeman's hat unless you swear that you want gun control to protect your officers. So, mostly what I've talked about, of course, is what I call common sense. The title of the program was More Simplism. Because every time you say something that makes sense, the only thing the double thinkers have to hide behind and say, well, that's being simplistic. That's not complicated enough. And speaking of simple, straightforward arguments, there was a Roman senator, I think it was Cicero, but I'm not sure, who would end up every speech, no matter what the subject was, by saying, and Carthage is a danger to Rome. Carthage must be destroyed. No matter what the speech was, he needed to get that point across. Well, I have what I call Bob's mantra. And I think that those of us who are considered racist, that is to say, those of us who are concerned about the white race, should hit on this point every single conversation. So let me finish this program with Bob's mantra. Quote, everybody says there's this race problem. Everybody says this race problem will be solved when the third world pours into every white country and only into white countries. The Netherlands and Belgium are more crowded than Japan or Taiwan, but nobody says Taiwan or Japan will solve this race problem by bringing in millions of third worlders and, quote, assimilating, unquote, with them. Everybody says the final solution to this race problem is for every white country and only white countries to, quote, assimilate, unquote, which means intermarry with all those non-whites. What if I said there was this race problem would be solved only if hundreds of millions of non-blacks were brought into every black country and only into black countries? How long would it take anyone to realize I'm not talking about a race problem? I'm talking about a final solution to the black problem. And how long would it take any sane black man to notice this? And what kind of black psycho man, what kind of psycho black man would not object to this solution, final solution to the black problem? But if I say that, if I point out that this race problem always exists in white countries, and that every white country and all white countries have to bring in and assimilate with vast numbers of non-whites. If I point that out, I'm a Nazi who wants to kill 6 million Jews. You see, that's because the people who call themselves anti-racists say that any objection to this program of the final solution to the race problem the final solution to the white problem. Any objection to that is racism. So anti-racism is anti-racist is a code word for anti-white. This is Bob Whitaker, the Untrained Eye. Hope to talk to you later.